taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast series. I am Joseph Ward, your host, and as always, we appreciate you for riding with us. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PACS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the code of conduct, how you can become a member, how you can donate, how you can get involved with the organization as well, or whether you're a member or not. There's a Learning Center tab, and if you hover your mouse over that Learning Center tab, you'll see a drop-down box with a number of good resources from audio, politics, books, survival, and videos. And there's also a store that you can purchase things and further support the organization. And remember, once again, their website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, as you know, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, my co-host, Patrick Urban, who's not here, but shout out to Patrick, Enigma September, Shelby Davis, and Queen Candace, all of our podcasters that we have here on the Freedom Train Network. Once again, www.freedomtrainradio.com. All right, so there's a lot going on in the nation right now. There's always a lot going on in the nation. These are particular times where a lot of focus and attention are on the deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and a host of other people who have been basically killed by the police. But police brutality doesn't always end in death. There are different stages and different ways that police brutalize its citizens or even harass its citizens. And this show today is dedicated to us learning more about how we can better understand the extent of police brutality, but also how we can learn some tips that we can better protect ourselves so we don't either get harassed or don't end up dead. But if we do get harassed, some different things that we could possibly do to kind of expand our minds. And we're interviewing a gentleman, a fellow Florida A&M graduate. I want to put that out there so you make sure you understand who you're dealing with. This gentleman is he's a veteran. He's an actor. He's a dancer. He has moved to Hollywood, California, to L.A. to further his career as an actor, as a dancer. He's even found himself in a movie, in a role with Denzel Washington. So this is a gentleman who is also a father. He's a husband. And he has dedicated himself to bettering his life, to chasing his dreams. So I want everybody to put their hands together for the incredible gentleman, the multi-talented Mr. Kyra Hawkins. What's going on, my brother? How you doing today?
Man, I'm working on it, man. I must say that was nice. Thank you. I really enjoyed that. I haven't heard an intro like that. That was the best intro I've received in my life. Thank you.
Man, I appreciate it. I'm trying to work on my intro game, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate it. We're happy to have you. We try to make sure that we do a good job of connecting our community to resources. And I think the story that you have to tell is a story that we can use, and it's resourceful, and you yourself are resourceful. You have different things that you can bring to the table to teach us and help us expand our minds. So, I said a little bit about you, but can you give our audience a little more background information about yourself and just kind of everything that you do and just bring to the table as an actor, as a dancer, as a husband, as a veteran?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for that question. So as Mr. Ward mentioned, I moved to L.A. This was back in 2009 after I graduated from Florida A&M University, the greatest university in the universe. I moved there with my dance crew, the Strikers All-Stars, who did America's Best Dance Crew. We did America's Got Talent. Okay. We've been in movies, Honey 2, music videos, everything, Sierra, a whole bunch of stuff. And, I kind of had an itch. I was affiliated with the company Herbalife. I still am. So I was making money from that. And using that to fund my career as an actor and as a dancer because, you know, in L.A., when you're an actor and a dancer, you're also unemployed, so it's great to have a side hustle. So I was doing all of those things, and then I met my wife, and I decided I wanted to go back into the Army. So we went back into the Army together. I was in the Army mm-hmm. when I was at FAMU, but okay. I decided to go back in. And now I just got out, so now I live in Northern California. And I was back and forth from L.A. to Northern California. The name of the city I live in is Sassoon City. It's about an hour away from Oakland, San Fran, and Sacramento. It's right in the middle of the Bay Area. So, you know, COVID happened. I was substitute teaching. I was track coaching, tutoring, also acting. I did 4 commercials this year between January and February, and then COVID happened. So everything just kind of stopped. Everything's virtual now. It's really weird and different. But, yeah, I was born in Pennsylvania. Both of my parents were in the military, so I moved around my whole life until I got to Georgia, and that's where I went to high school in Atlanta, Southwest Cab High School. And then from there to FAMU, I fell in love with the band and the people and black people and just everything about it. So now we're here, and I met, you know, amazing people along the way like you.
Yes, sir, yes, sir. And that's what I was just going to say. As I was reading through your information, it all started coming back to me from FAMU, because I remember everything now from FAMU. I also remember when the Strikers first went out on what was America's Best Dance Crew, because my friend Eddie Bennett was in there with you. And so, yes, sir. So, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You mentioned my dog, man. I can't, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to Edwin Bennett. Me and Edwin Bennett were roommates in L.A. for years.
Okay.
Man. Like, lived in the same room together. So that's, like, all the way my homeboy. So shout out to
exactly
him.
Exactly. That's cool. That's cool, man. And so, like I was saying, you've done a lot of incredible things because you guys really represented yourselves, you represented your families, you represented FAMU, you represented the dance community. Like, me and my homeboys, we was literally in front of the TV watching you all every week. Like, we're not really into dance like that, but we were supporting you guys. So definitely hats off to everything that you've done in your life and just getting to the point to where you are. So.
For sure.
Yeah, sir. So, unfortunately, you and your family had a incident with the Sassoon City Police in May. And so there are some people who know about it, because I know in doing my research on it, it's all over YouTube. There are numerous articles that shed light on the story. But for those who don't know, can you give background information about what happened with you and the Sassoon City Police?
Sure, of course. So just so everybody knows, it's a small city. It's about 30,000 residents. The city is only about 4 square miles. The police force has about, it should be 18 now, policemen on the whole police force. They lack funding.
Right.
And it's just a very small city. The mayor's black. She's a woman. She's the first black woman mayor of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And the fire chief is also a black man. And the police chief is very cool, he has a good reputation. And he called me personally after the incident happened. So there's no kind of... Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think it's some kind of bad blood or something, but essentially what happened was former Officer Marler, for people who didn't watch the video, is a white male named Cody Marler, and his partner, Tiffany Conema. Both of them are anywhere between the ages of 22 and 25. It was 8:40 p.m. the night before Mother's Day, and my father-in-law drove up from Southern California. He lives there. Me and my wife live here. I got out the Army 3 months ago, and we decided to move here specifically to be around my wife's side of the family. So he came up, so it was a special time. My family was at my house all Saturday. It was a great day. It hadn't happened in years. You know, my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, a bunch of sisters-in-laws, you know, their husbands, so my brother-in-laws, and it was just a good time. And one of my sister-in-laws dates a Golden State Warrior. So I got NBA players at my house. You see, I'm trying to paint the picture. It's like a really good time. I'm grilling, I'm a cute dog, so of course I'm grilling. You know what I mean? And everything is just a great atmosphere. They leave about at 8 p.m. At 8:40 p.m., I hear a police bang, a police knock on my door. If you're black and American, you're a man, you know what the police knock sounds like.
Exactly.
So I looked at my wife and I say, "Who's that?" You know, she says, "It's the police." What's running through my mind is my family was just here, and they just left in about two different cars with about six different people. I'm like, did they get in a car accident? Is everything okay? Or is somebody in some kind of trouble? Did they get pulled over and they told them where they came from and they came here to tell us some kind of news? All this stuff is running through my head. When I open my door, former officer Cody Marler, the first thing he says to me is that your girlfriend or your baby mama? Like literally like that. That's what he says to me before he says anything. That's the first thing that came out of his mouth. And they're supposed to be releasing the super disrespectful. And no other situation has that happened to me besides this situation. So the body cam footage is supposed to be released, and you will hear him say that. I have several cameras set up at my house, but for some reason none of them was recording. But we do have, you know, the footage that I got on my phone, footage on my wife's phone, and some other little footage, but we don't have anything of him saying that. But the body cam footage will have that. So he says that. Then him and his partner move forward with questioning me with rapid-fire interrogation questions. Now, I have my criminal justice degree from the greatest university in the universe, Florida A&M University. And one of the first things we learn in cases and corrections taught by Dr. Ajapong and one of the first things that I learned in Women in Crime taught by Dr. Felicia Dix Richardson was Interrogation 101 is they just ask you a bunch of questions over and over to see if you mess up. So they started requesting information from me. They started violating my rights. They started saying, you know, what's your name? You know, what address is this? Who's Giselle? Who's XYZ? What's this? What's that?
Right.
They didn't introduce themselves to me, follow proper police protocol. They didn't say who they were with. They didn't say what the situation was. They didn't give me any background on why they were banging on my door and then insulting me immediately. So I didn't answer any questions, so former officer Marler decides to tell me to eat a dick. And I don't know if I can curse on your podcast, but...
You're good.
Yeah, that's what he said to me, and then he stormed off like, you know, some type of teenager or something. And then that's when I pulled out my phone and started recording after he said that, because I couldn't believe that, you know, somebody was at my doorstep offending me. And wearing a police uniform with a gun and a taser and handcuffs. And they in the wrong spot. They had the address that they got through their lazy police work, but they have the wrong person, and they weren't listening. So as the video went on, you will see more and more of kind of the interrogation turning around. I started interrogating them. And what you don't see is they came back and apologized to me after the end of the video and did the proper thing, which they should have done in the first place, is tell me their names. Tell me what police department they're from. Explain who they are and what they're doing here. So it turns out they were conducting a welfare check on a child because North Bay Hospital called them because a three-year-old had ingested a nail polish remover. So the lady Giselle, we're just going to call her that because that's what they said her name was, she gave them this address, or rather they found this address on an ID or a driver's license or however they ID'd her through the database at the hospital, which would be a HIPAA violation, but they acquired the address by not talking to her, because the reason that Marler and his partner said that they came at me the way they did is because the people at the hospital were uncooperative. So they brought that same energy to my house, the wrong house, mind you. And, you know, that's how everything went down, because of their lazy police work, because nobody, I guarantee you, even you, sir, if I look on your ID or your driver's license, I would bet money that it's probably not the address that you live at right now. Or at one point in your life, you had an ID or a driver's license that had a different address on it.
Right.
It just, it's what it is. People move, whatever happens, whatever.
And they might not
update
it.
They came here because of that. Yeah, they might not update it. And because, you know, it's every 3 years. So if I move within 3 years, I'm not going to update it until it's expired. And they didn't consider that possibility when they came here, that they might have the wrong address. And they came at me all the way incorrectly. And that's why Marla doesn't have his job anymore, but Kanema, she still walks the streets. They're short-staffed. They couldn't afford to let her go. So she was trying to de-escalate, but she's actually the one that escalated because she tapped on my window and interacted with my daughter, which I didn't know that happened.
I saw that.
I did not. I did not consent to any searches, and she searched my house, which is a violation of my Fourth Amendment right, and that's what happened, but she's still an officer. So when I filed my complaint, and I don't know if this is if I'm finished answering your question, but let me throw this in there.
Go ahead.
When I filed the complaint, I recommended to the police chief that Officer Kahneman come back to my house, or we go and meet her somewhere, and she have a male counterpart, and they both apologized to my wife, because nobody's apologized to my wife yet. People have called me, the mayor, the police chief, the fire chief. Nobody's talked to my wife, so I want Kahneman specifically, the female, to apologize to my wife for violating her rights and doing bad police work, pretty much. I want her to admit it. It was bad police work. You need to admit, if you're a public servant, if you're a professional, you need to admit when you messed up. You need to admit it. So just like they apologized to me, they need to apologize to her. And then they need to play right. officer friendly with my daughter, since the first time my daughter interacted with the police was me yelling at
right.
her and them disrespecting me, cursing in front of my wife and my kids, disrespecting them and banging on the door, which is giving my family trauma. Because now when somebody knocks on our
exactly.
door, we don't know who it is.
They're expecting the police.
You know, I'm ready to go grab a firearm or a weapon, a blunt object. You know what I mean? We don't know.
Right.
We're soldiers. You know what I'm saying? I'm an Army veteran. I got PTSD, man. My wife is in
right.
the Army right now. We're trained killers, man. They can't do that to people. So, you know, that's what
yeah.
happened in a nutshell.
And man, like, that angers me to hear that. As I was reading through the information and just getting more familiar with your story, now, I'm glad you cleared something up, because at first I thought it seemed as if they just closed their eyes and picked the house with the black man. That's what it seems from some of the videos. But it was, like you said, lazy police work. Then they come to your house. But you also pointed out that they brought negative energy to your house because of the interactions that they had, I guess, with the family that they was looking for before they got to you. So they brought
right.
negative energy
yeah.
to your house. So do you think, in addition to that negative energy, them seeing like a black man or a black family, do you think that contributed to some of the disrespect or contributed to them escalating the situation? Or do you think that they were just going to do that no matter what if it was black or white family?
Oh, it was definitely because I'm black. Like, it's no way
okay.
that I'm a middle-aged white man and I'm walking outside my house and he's saying those words to me. There's no way that he's telling me to eat a male appendage if I'm somebody that looks like him and talking to him how I was talking to him. He would have been yes sir, no sir, which he swallowed some humble pie and came back to me and was on some yes sir, no sir, and wanted to even, like, dap me up at it, and he wanted to give me a fist bump. And I looked at him and I said, hell no, man. Like, do you realize the damage you've done? Like, you need to get off my property, man.
Right.
This is when they came back and apologized. It's not on video. My wife got a small clip on her phone, and I posted it on Facebook. But it's not any kind of YouTube footage or nothing was on the news when they came back and apologized. And the first thing I said to them when they came back and apologized was, so you guys do like your jobs. Okay, I see that you do like your jobs
mm-hmm.
because you're coming back here trying to reconcile what you've done. But the damage has already been done, man. It's nothing that you can do now. Like, it's my mess to clean up. And the reason that the female, which she doesn't really get kudos from me, is because, like I said, she was escalating it, but she let him say those things. So she was with him
right.
when they went to the hospital, and she brought that same energy. So a lot of people, if you look on the YouTube comments, like not the trolls, but the real YouTube comments,
right.
the real, we have like a Solano County Community Awareness Facebook page. When you look at even the racists and white supremacists in there and just the people that have some sense and not trolls, they're kind of giving Kahneman a slack, but I'm like, she let him say those things. She tried
right.
to justify it in the video by saying it wasn't mine to lead with, but you still let him do those things. She sent him away, but then he came back. So the fact
mm-hmm.
that she couldn't control him, it put something
right.
in my head that maybe he has some kind of stigma down at the precinct where all the cops know that he's like this, and they were glad to see him leave. That's pretty much what I got from it. But, yeah, it was because I was black, and it's
wow.
COVID, and I didn't
okay.
have a haircut. And I had on a white T-shirt. My wife had on a white T-shirt. You know, we had the house chilling, man. Like, it's because I looked how I looked. That's
right.
why he took that time
right.
with me. But he didn't expect, like, you know, an educated black man from Florida A&M University to answer the
yeah.
door.
Yeah.
My neighbor went to FAMU. He didn't know we had two Rattlers. I got an old black man named Scotty. His
okay.
license plate says FAMU on it. You know what I mean?
That's
he didn't
good.
Know where he
that's
was
good.
At.
That's good. Right. Yeah, and that's great. Like, you handled that in a great way. You handled it intelligently. You handled it with class. Of course, you were angry. And I don't fault nobody for lashing out in that situation because it shouldn't have happened. They should have came to you cordially like human beings. So now you mentioned something earlier, though, about you want them to come back and play officer friendly with your daughter. So just real quick, why is it, in your opinion, why is it important for them to come back and repair or do their best to repair or build another bridge or something with your daughter? Why do you think that's important?
I think that's important because my daughter is very bright. She's very astute, and I do believe wholeheartedly that she has a photographic memory. She's only 2.5, and I asked her about an event that happened 1 year ago when she was 1.5. She was 18 months, and I asked her specifically about an event. It was a friend that she had at her school, and she remembered her friend's name. She remembered what her friend used to do, and she recalled and remembered other things, and I'm like, This girl is 2.5. I'm asking her something that happened last year when she was 1.5, and she's reciting specific events that happened. So even though she wasn't in direct connection, she wasn't outside with me, the window to my house is set up in a way where anybody who's approaching my house, my daughter gets up and looks out the window and sees them coming. Now she says things like, you know, oh, I'm scared. She's learning what scared is and being strong and brave is. She says, Papa is yelling sometimes when I'm outside. She randomly says these things. You know what I mean? She wants to see people coming on the camera now. Like I said, she's very bright and she's very astute. So right now, as it goes for black people in America, especially black men, we don't know whether police are safe or not. But I would like to believe, since I spent 9 years of my life as a public servant, I like to believe that EMTs, firemen, policemen, and military, I like to believe that those people are somebody that you can call and trust if it need be with your life. If you're in some type of danger and you're calling on these public servants who raised their hand and took an oath to protect you, I would like to think that it's safe to call them if you're in some type of trouble. And I want my daughter to be aware that, you know, that is the purpose of these people in this uniform. I want to have the right, and I want to have that respect to teach her that in the way that I teach her, not in a way that police come bang on my door and it's the wrong place and everything happened how it happened. And now she's formulating her own, you know, stigma about policemen and police work because she's smart like that. See what I mean? So to reconcile it, that's just one suggestion I have.
I get you. Now that makes perfect sense. Being that she internalized that trauma. She clearly understood something went wrong, something bad happened. She clearly understands that. And the way you're describing it seems like she understands the relationship between like you and the police and those interactions, especially if she has a photographic memory, then this is something she would never forget.
Exactly.
So, that makes sense. I'm going to modify this question a bit. So what were your... what were your feelings toward the police before this incident? And now what are your feelings toward the police after this incident?
It's the same, man. Like, you know, when they came back and tried to apologize because the female essentially, Kanama essentially made Marler come back and apologize because she didn't want like a bad taste in my mouth. But I told her it's not going to be a bad taste in my mouth because, you know, hey, look, I put on a uniform for 9 years. Like, I understand, like, sometimes it's shitty. Like, I don't know what happened to them at the hospital. I don't know how it went down, but, you know, he came back and he told me, and I quote, you know, I've been going through personal shit. And I said, hey, you got to tell your partner that because you're dealing with people, and I'm a black man, and, Ahmaud Arbery had just happened. I'm like, do you know what's going on in America with black men and police? I was like, you can't do what you did, man. Like, it's no wiggle room for it. I was like, you're probably going to lose your job. Like, it's just not cool. I said, you need to take some leave. Take that badge off if you're going to be that way. You can't be that way. So I understand certain people are racist. I understand certain people have their perceptions about people and how they grew up. And, you know, I understand all these things because I did 9 years in the military. So I've worked with all types of people from all types of backgrounds, farmers and people from countries you didn't even know existed, guys from, like, Saipan and just weird places. People from Guam, like, oh, yeah, it's a U.S. territory. Like, you know, you learn, and it's like a non-factor when it comes to racism in the military. Right now, it's crazy. But, you know, at one point when I joined first in 2003 and there was a war going on, there wasn't any space for that. You know what I mean? But, you know, now with everything happening and things coming to light, you'll see in the military those things happening with the leadership not addressing what's going on and, you know, everything like that. So, you know, I say all that to say the question you asked me about, you know, my perception about policemen, it did not change. What I was so pissed about is that, man, you're including my wife and my daughters in this. Like, if it's just me, if it was just me at my house, or if I'm on the street, if I'm getting pulled over in the car, that conversation, that conflict doesn't happen. Because I'm staying calm. Because you can violate me all you want. I can take it. I'm built for it, man. Like, God gave me the ability to deal with your shit. I have that special power. Like, I'm good. But look, man, you're including my wife in this, and you're including my two black African-American princesses. So it's like, it's not possible for me not to get angry at you. But my perception has not changed. I know it's good cops, bad cops. I wish it was all good cops, like we all do. But, you know, with some, you know, scum pieces of shit like that guy that came here, and, you know, if I ever see him again, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know what I mean? That's how I feel about it.
Now, that's real, though. I can understand definitely the emotions toward him. Also understand your feelings when your family is involved. Because these are people, especially as a man, these are people that's my duty to protect these people. And you come and violating my whole space and my family space. And now that's gonna make me take it to another level, because I want to make sure my family is okay. And you seem like you ain't trying to impede me from taking care of my family. So I get you on that. So correct me if I'm wrong, because from some of the information that I was came across, was a public apology issued to you through Facebook?
Yeah, the mayor called me personally. My pastor, John Butcher, he's pretty much he works with a lot of the public officials, and he hit me up and he was like, "Look, man, call the mayor." He was like, "Call the mayor, like now, like call her." And he gave me, you know, her number, and I called her, and we talked. She apologized. That's the first person I talked to after the incident, public official wise.
Right.
And then the police chief was on leave, so one of the commanders called me. He apologized. The fire chief is a black man, and he just wanted to talk to me off the record. He's like, "Look, man, that was crazy that happened. That's some BS. I don't condone it. I deal with it." You know what I mean? Then the police chief wanted to call me, and he apologized. So, you know, people apologize, and then they issued that public apology as well. And it got so much – because, like I said, this is a small city. It's a small community. It got so much attention that people were spray painting graffiti on a private property, like really big, a prominent place in the city. It was a stone wall. And it said what the officer told me. It said SCPD, Sassoon City Police Department. It said eat a dick, because that's what they had an officer who, you know, they vetted. That's what they said to me, and that's what happened. And I have a babysitter that comes here from the Air Force Base, you know, every day to babysit, you know, my girls. And she said, real big, and it's three of them. And every day I come here to babysit, I see it. And I think they've cleaned it up now, but it's like, you know, hopefully they see the magnitude of vetting people and not doing extensive background checks or screening them before they join your police force. You know what I mean?
Right. So, like you said, Marla was fired. Apologies were given. Are you overall satisfied with the outcomes of this incident, or do you think more need to be done from the Sassoon City Police to rectify this situation and make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, so, you know, as far as me, you know, I'm just going to tell you straight up like this. Like, I didn't want him fired. I wanted him to stay on the force, and I wanted him to want to get better. And I know you can't want for somebody to want to get better, but what I would have done, I said a whole bunch of suggestions to the police chief. I talked to his partner, and I was telling him, I said, hey, y'all need to do cultural sensitivity training and all that. In the Army, we used to call it death by PowerPoint, where you go on a day, you don't get paid, and you go on a weekend or a day or whatever it is, and you sit in front of PowerPoints all day, and you have to wear a specific uncomfortable uniform, like a dress uniform, and you got to sit up there, and you got to go there early at 6 in the morning, and you leave late at night, like 8 at night, and you're sitting there all day. You know, you get, a sack lunch. You know what I mean? You just make it, they just dread that experience, and they have to learn at the same time. It's forced learning, because whether they want to or not, they have to learn it. You know what I mean? And it calls for some kind of call and response to see if they're actually, you know, ingesting the material. And I want him to be the first responder to any time there is an angry black man or there is a black person, specifically a black man. More specifically, if they look like me, I wanted him to respond to it and him to handle the situations until he learned how to handle it the correct way, because there was no connect between him and myself. Like, there was no kind of empathy with everything that's going on in America, first and foremost, but there was no kind of consideration from him saying, I'm knocking on somebody's door disturbing their peace, and I'm the cops. You know what I mean? Like, who guards the guardians? Who polices the police? You know what I mean? Like, if you're doing this, who do I call? You know what I mean? And that's why I'm glad we have social media, because it can put somebody on blast, but at the same time, my life was in danger. So, you know, the steps that I'm taking for what happened is, I literally, before I got on the phone with you, I was on the phone with the community coordinator for, it's something called the VIPS program, V-I-P-S. It's a volunteer in the police service. And she lives, like, 4 doors down from me, man. It's such a small city. Like, it's a small world, but it's a small city. I was talking to this woman for about an hour. Her name is Katrina Garcia. And what I did is I went on the Sassoon PD website, and I said, I want to volunteer. And I emailed the volunteer coordinator. The lady stays four doors down from me, because I want to be a face at that police department. I want to go there and say, hey, me, a black man, I was racially profiled on my own doorstep. You know, I was a victim of racial injustice, but I'm here volunteering with you all to show you that there doesn't have to be any kind of ill will. It can be a learning experience. You know, you move forward and you learn and grow together. And then what I want to bring to them is attention that it's a zero tolerance on that, which I think they get. But it's like, that doesn't even need, that needs to be a conversation. That doesn't even need to be a possibility. Like, that just doesn't happen. That's an all the way no-go.
Right.
That's what I'm doing.
So in hearing you say that, it makes me ask, what have you learned different or in addition to what you already knew about the interaction between police force, period, police forces and black people? Like, what has this given you more insight? Has it changed some of the things? Like, what have you learned from this?
If anything, you know, that's an excellent question. If anything, I learned more about myself. I looked at the video a couple of times myself. I rewatched the video. It's about 8 minutes long. And, you know, because I'm a speaker, I'm a public speaker, I'm a mentor, I'm a lot of things. I wear a lot of different hats, and I'm always looking at myself and critiquing myself. And, you know, I give myself about a B because, you know, I let my passion and my emotion kind of overspeak the things that I really wanted to say. And, any speaker, you'll do this often. You'll see a speech or something, and you'll look at your patterns, and you'll say, oh, I could have said that differently. Oh, I could have did this. You know, giving yourself critiques and moving forward and getting better. And I don't think I did too bad, but I learned a lot about myself, you know, getting put in a situation like that. And, you know, it just hits a lot differently when it hits home like that. Like, a lot of people are, you know, we had Blackout Tuesday yesterday, and then it's the whole Black Lives Matter movement. And it's like, until it hits home, you know, you don't see how people are actually affected by it. You know what I mean? Unless you're the family of Ahmaud Arbery or George Floyd or Eric Garner, anybody like that, unless you're the family member, you really don't know how it hits until it hits super close to home. Because all I was thinking the whole time is that I may be the next victim. I may get arrested here or brutalized or even shot and killed on my own front doorstep, you know, all because we have some kind of, you know, asshole cop who's lazy and young and, you know, whatever else, you know, a piece of trash. And it's like, I'm thinking of this the whole time, and you know, if anything, I learned a lot about myself and how you don't know how you're going to react in a certain situation until you're in it. And
right.
and overall, that was my takeaway. That's what I got. Like, okay, so that's how I react in those types of situations. When I have my when my family is right in my vicinity and I feel threatened. I feel threatened because my family is being threatened, and this is how I react. And I learned right. that about myself because that was a real situation.
Yes, it was. It was. And it was a situation that you should not have been in. And, like, I was talking on an interview yesterday, and somebody asked me, how do I feel right now? And I feel angry. Like, just listening to you is making me angry. Looking at what's going on nationally is making me angry. But at the same time, it didn't happen directly to me. But as a black man, I feel like if it's happening to you, it's happening to me. Because that's my individual mentality. So with that being said, you've already expressed that been time in the military, PTSD is something that you experienced. This situation was traumatic for you and your family. So how are you dealing? How are you working through the trauma? How are you coping with the trauma? Like, what are some things that you are doing, or are you doing anything to kind of help with the trauma, not just with yourself, but with your wife and your daughters?
Yeah, man. Like, that's one of the things that I expected from the city for them to do, or at least offer, is, you know, for us to talk to somebody. Like, we need to talk to a medical professional. You know, with COVID, it's really hard to get into anywhere. Like, we have health care and we have health insurance. But, you know, honestly, with COVID, everything is super backlogged, super backed up. And in the meantime, mm-hmm. you know, we're suffering. Besides us talking to each other, kind of talking to family here and there, because it's such a sensitive subject for them, you know, they're scared. Like, literally, my mom, she's in Atlanta, Georgia, and my mom mm-hmm. said, she was, like, shaking when she saw the video. When I first posted it on Facebook, she was shaking. And the only reason that video ended is because my big sister called me. When she called me, it ended the video. So my big sister was the first person to talk to me after it happened. Like, literally immediately after, you know, that video ended, I was on the phone with her. The video ended because she called me, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And these family mm-hmm. members, they don't really know how to kind of talk about it. You know what I mean? It's kind of
right.
It's hard to talk about. You know what I mean? It's hard because there's so many different considerations, and, you know, people may agree or disagree with how it was handled, or, you know, how I went about, you know, whatever happened. You know what I mean? So it's all of those things. So in the least, I would have expected the city to let us sit down and talk to somebody. And it's something that I'm going to make happen, just with COVID-19.
Okay.
It's really hard right now. And I'm going to make sure I take care of myself. I'm going to, as a
right.
veteran, you know, I get to go to, you know, the veterans clinic and everything. And, you mm-hmm. know, I'm going to make sure I go see a mental health professional there, because black mental health is definitely necessary. And I got to make sure I'm good so I can provide for my family. So I think that's first and foremost, me taking care of myself and making sure I'm mentally good from it, and that it's not, like, aggravating my, you know, my PTSD. And then, you know, besides that, you know, getting them ready next. Getting them ready
right.
to see somebody whenever we have that opportunity.
Right. Nah, yeah, definitely, definitely. If you, like I was having a conversation with somebody earlier today, if you know you need it, go get the help. Just black people, period, just in America, without all the added stress, we need counseling, just being black people in America. So,
yeah.
Now, as we talked about before the show, fortunately, you are alive. Fortunately, you weren't physically abused by the police. But the community, the black community, your story and what happened to your incident is something that the black community could rally around, can still rally around, should be rallying around the same way we would rally around people when they die. So Can you express to us, from somebody who's been through the situation, why it's important for black people to be able to rally around someone like yourself, even though you were not killed? Like, because you've been through it, and clearly you're expressing a lot of things in this interview that people can learn from, but kind of help people really get a good understanding of why we should be rallying around everybody and supporting everybody who is a victim of police violence from any degree of the violence that they receive.
Yeah, man, you killing it. And I think that's that is the golden, pivotal, quintessential question that somebody can ask me right now. Because I think that what we're missing is it's become such a pattern. It's become such a behavioral pattern of these law enforcement officers who are white or non-black to kill black people. And now that we're getting it on film and it's coming to light, it's becoming a thing. And because it's becoming a thing so often, like you can just name endless amount of people that have suffered from racial injustice and inequalities and losing their lives, that we think that is what's supposed to happen. It's being ingrained in our brains. It's being implanted in our memories that whenever the history books come out later on in life and it'll talk about this time and everything that's happening right now with martial law and everything like that, it's going to say because of the death of George Floyd. It's going to say because of the death of Trayvon Martin and everything like that. It's going to talk about Ahmaud Arbery. It's going to mention these people. My name will not be in those history books because what people are paying attention to is that we are supposed to die. We are supposed to get shot, brutalized, like Rodney King. You know what I mean? It's supposed to be like that. But for the people like me, who it happens to, that those things don't happen because we're doing the right thing, or, you know, if as fortune may have it, you know, we're getting out of the situation that could have happened, we have to pay attention to that. And people are super insensitive to the fact that pretty much whatever a notch is below what happened to, let's say, like a Botham Jean, like a cop coming in your house and shooting you, like whatever a notch below that is, that's what I experienced. It would be like if Amber Geiger came in Botham Jean's house and yelled at him and got into an argument with him and then left. Wouldn't that be traumatic for a cop to come in your house and yell at you and leave? It's COVID-19. They don't have a mask on and they're yelling at you? Wouldn't that be a thing? But, since she got shot dead and she got 5 years, now it's a thing. You see what I mean? So we're not paying attention to the black people who are not dying, who are quote-unquote winning. A lot of people are telling me, well, you won. And I'm like, well, okay, I see why you would say that. But I think that I can be the person that sparks something like this to happen for people to pay attention to more. Because even when I get into conversations on social media with people about racial inequality and injustice and Black Lives Matter, nobody brings up my situation. It's almost like that situation doesn't matter. Let's focus on the people who got killed and died. Of course that's important. Of course that matters. But what about for the people who don't die or get brutalized or get wrongfully arrested? Because I see those videos on YouTube all the time. I just saw a video on YouTube where they tried to arrest a black guy wrongfully and they looked at his ID and he was an FBI agent.
So what about
him? You see what I'm saying? And that was just, he was good because he was out with his boys and stuff. But what about me? I have my family. I'm at my house. What about that? And people really don't see the magnitude because they didn't go through it, and they mention it, like, subsequently, you know what I mean? But initially, they don't even address it because it's almost like a non-factor in these conversations, and I think that it needs to be a factor.
It is. It's weaponized whiteness at its finest with the badge as well, because as I'm listening to you, I'm also, if I can help people kind of wrap their minds around it, because for me, it's similar to like a video you see a white woman is in the same space with a black man, and she's on the phone with the police screaming, he's trying to hurt me, he's trying to hurt me, he's trying to hurt me. Now, that black man may not have been killed, but that black man has been through a traumatic situation because he could have been killed. And I do agree with you that we have to rally around all of our people, who have gone through these situations, we should not only do it to those who were killed, because that means I don't want us to be gluttons for death and gluttons for pain. Now I also believe in continuous community work. So you, like you stated earlier, you're going to go back and you're going to work with this force, with the Suzume City Police, to rectify things so this has never happened to any other black man by this police department again. And, you know, can't help but applaud you for that, because you have to get active. If you don't get active, you're not going to get change. So,
You know what sucks about that? Thank you for saying that, man. It really means a lot. Like, I'm not just saying that. It really does, because I don't hear enough of it. And I don't think that I can hear enough of it. You know what I mean? I won't know if I hear enough of it until I hear enough of it, and I don't hear enough of it at all. I'm talking about, like, you and, like, my wife. Like, that's it. Nobody else. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
that's it.
Right.
So I really appreciate that. That's the magnitude of my appreciation of you saying that. But you know what was sad about me talking to that volunteer coordinator? She kept it all the way 100 with me. She said, hey, you know, I really do need you to come around, because at these community meetings, and we do quarterly neighborhood watch meetings where it's all the block captains, she said it's all old white guys. She said it's all 100% Caucasian. She said we need some color, because she's like, I'm mixed. She's like, I'm white and black. I'm mixed. And I think her husband is Hispanic, if I'm not mistaken. I just met her. But she was like, we need some color up in there. So, you know, I think you know enough about me. And if we went to Florida, Agriculture, McKenna University, October 3rd, 1887, what? Like,
there
that attitude that we got there that stemmed from that and anything before that, like, I bring that into everything that I touch and everything I do. Like, it's in me. So if it's a bunch of Caucasian old white guys, hey, I'm the middle-aged black guy. I'm here now, so now I'm here. Here I am, and that's what it is now. I don't fear no man or any human being whatsoever. So I will step up on the scene gladly, and I will bring to their attention what happened to me, no secrets. Like, I even told her, like, when I literally walked out my house, man. Mr. Ward, I walked out my house. She walked out her house. We started waving to each other. Started talking to each other on the phone. We continue to talk to each other on the phone, looking at each other. She stays right there, man. Like, I went on her Facebook.
Right.
I took a picture of her boys running in the front yard. I'm like, oh, there goes my car. Like, bro, we're like, I'm gonna be all the way in there. Yep, I'm the guy.
I don't blame
racial injustice, but hey, I'm here. So y'all gonna have to deal with it.
Yeah. No, and that's real, because structural racism has to be challenged directly. But I also know that all the white police officers and all the white city councilmen and law enforcement people in your city who say they are not racist, they need to be supporting you. They need to be making sure that they fight structural racism themselves, because if not, they're not helping the situation, and they're not being genuine in their apology to you if they don't step up to the plate and actually work to change things. Other than that, they're just trying to make you feel good, and as black people, that don't keep us alive. So, put the fire to them. Put that fire to them. So,
you hit it on a ball,
Yes, sir. So, down to our last question, and I changed. It's not our usual last question because of this specific interview and what we're talking about. I changed it, but what message would you like to give black people to help us either avoid or come out of these situations, not being arrested and not being killed?
We've come to a day and age where we have to film. When you look at the video that I posted, it changed the attitude. It changed the attitude of the cops. Like, they came to my house. There's an Xfinity home camera there. There's a Ring doorbell camera, and then there's a closed circuit TV camera. So it's three cameras on them.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, when you pull out your phone, that changes things because they're like, oh, I'm getting filmed. You know what I mean? Even though you were already getting filmed. It's kind of because that can be a you can automatically go live. You know what I mean? So they're like, you know, holy crap, this is live. Like, my job is on the line at this point. So film is the first thing you want to do, and you want to do it as quickly and as efficiently as possible because depending on the situation, they can think that you're reaching for a firearm. So the first thing you want to do is have that phone out. Whenever the first word that comes out of a law enforcement officer, you are a peace officer, whenever you see a uniformed officer, male or female, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, Latino, when they come up to you and say one word, pull out your device and start recording live, Facebook Live, Instagram Live, whatever. Put them on Snapchat. I don't care. Do something where it's streaming and it's uploading and it's immediate. That's first and foremost. Secondly, I want you to know your basic rights. I pride myself on history. I mean, that's just how it goes from my education. And, you know, through my research, you know, I just know that when the Constitution was ratified in, I believe, 1787, or sometime around that time, 1784, maybe have my years mixed up, that was the same time that black people were three-fifths of a man because they didn't want black people to vote and they wanted to tax them, but you couldn't have taxation without representation. So the compromise was for every five blacks, three of them can X, Y, Z. So you were three-fifths of a person, so how could you be every man is created equally, but you're three-fifths of a person over here? So that would beg somebody to ask the question, am I even a person that's supposed to be a part of this Bill of Rights and Constitution and amendments to the Constitution? You know, and everybody talks about the 13th Amendment or whatever, the freeing of slaves and everything like that. It didn't free all of them. A lot of them stayed there. And then people talk about modern-day slavery, and that can of worms can be, you know, open some other time. But, you know, you want to know your basic rights as an American citizen. I'm not saying American is your race. I'm not saying American is your cultural ethnicity, because we all know that the natives are the real Americans that was here before anybody. Right. When the so-called people discovered it, Amerigo Vespucci, Christopher Columbus, when they so-called discovered a place where people already were, it was already people here, so how can you discover something that's already there? So when you look at history and you look at rights, and it's a game that you really can't win or get even or get out of, you still got to know how to play the game. And how you play the game is knowing what those rights say, knowing maybe the first 10 amendments. I know they taught us that in social studies, but just knowing generally, like, hey, my First Amendment means freedom of speech. As long as I'm not endangering anybody by saying there's a fire or there's a bomb, I can say whatever the hell I want to say. And that's, if you look at the video, that's what I was saying to the officers. I was like, I can talk funky to you because I don't have on a uniform. You have on a uniform. And my tax dollars pay for that uniform. And it pays it pays your salary. You know what I mean? You get a uniform bonus. I know because the American tax dollars paid my salary when I was in the military, and we used to get a uniform bonus every year. And I know you get a uniform bonus to pay for that uniform you have on. So even the uniform that you have on is coming from my dollars. And for you to talk to me like that, it's just I can't even put together in my head what possessed him to think that he could do that. So you got to have that film. You got to know your rights. And if you don't feel threatened or if you're not in danger, you know, compose yourself as much as possible. I have two nephews that I just talked to. They're twins. They're 17. They're in Portland, Oregon. And it was some people looting about three blocks from their house. And I got on a call with them and their mother, who's my cousin. And you know, I was telling them the same things. I'm like, hey, make sure you stay calm. Make sure you answer questions, you know, and have it filmed. Have it filmed and know your rights. And if you think one of your rights are getting violated, ask the officers, like, what, aren't you violating my First Amendment right now? Or whatever right you think is getting violated, just mention that because it's on film and it's live and you're getting their name and badge number and you're making sure that they're in compliance with, you know, the protocol set in place for what they took an oath for. So, you know, that's what we have to do. That's my advice. Definitely do that anytime you talk to anybody in a uniform. That's just what it is now. If you got to wear a damn harness with a GoPro on there that's constantly streaming, do that. I recommend that. Whatever
what you
got
to
do.
Right. Nah, that's real. That's real. It's unfortunate, but it's real. Black people in America, we have to make sure that we do whatever we need to do to keep ourselves safe in these interactions, being able to come home. But And like in your case, Kyra, in your case, it can't stop there. You have to make sure you're active. You have to make sure you are working to change the way things happen. And all the good white people, all the good white cops, it's y'all job to jump in and help break down, or it's y'all job to mainly work with this structural racism, because, you know, y'all benefiting from it and y'all ancestors built it. So that's it, you know, that's how I feel. So, man, I definitely appreciate you coming by and telling us about your story. I'm definitely have to get you back on. We have to talk about your acting and your dancing. So we definitely are going to have you back in the future, because I know we want to get this out.
All right, for sure.
But you bring so much more and you do so much more. So definitely got to get you back on, my brother. Yeah.
All right, for sure, man. I appreciate the opportunity, man. You nailed it.
No problem. So before you go, how can people get in contact with you? How can they see some of your work and everything? Just what's the best ways for people to contact you?
My first name, Kyra, and then if Kyra Hawkins doesn't pop up in a Google result, just Kyra Omega, and that's just across all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, whatever else kids have these days, I'm probably on there. But Kyra Omega, C-Y-R-A-H Omega, O-M-E-G-A. If you just put it into Google, my stuff should pop up. And I say that because that's the answer that I've given to so many of my classrooms, because when I substitute teach, when I write my name on the board, these kids nowadays, they all have cell phones, and they Google me. And I figured out that I was Googleable, because all my kids that I go substitute at, especially when I go to high school, they Google me, and they say, "Is this you?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, yeah, I guess, yeah, that is me." You know what I mean? So
right.
I just tell people that now. I'm like, you want to get in contact? Just type my name in Google,
that's
and
cool.
Everything should pop up.
Yeah, that's cool. Man, but once again, thank you for coming by. Also, congratulations on all the success that you've had. I wish you and your family well. And this platform is a platform that you can come back in and use any messages you need to get out and anything. That's what we built this for, the community. So I appreciate you for stopping by.
All right, yep. Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And definitely talk to you soon.
All right, talk to you soon. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, sir. No problem. All right. Yes, yes, y'all. And you don't stop until the beat freaking, you don't stop. So, once again, that's the good brother, Kyra Hawkins. Another Florida A&M rattler in the house. Giving us the breakdown of what happened to him and his family and the interactions, the horrible interactions with the Sassoon City Police in May. And like I said, one of the main reasons why we had the brother on to tell his story, but to also bring more light and bring more consciousness to us rallying around everybody who's a victim of police violence. At any degree, like I said earlier, whatever, I don't matter the degree, the police violence, police harassment, all those things, we need to make sure that we're rallying around everybody within our community. And hell, look, we know what's going on right now in the country. It's always been going on, but now more of a spotlight is happening. So once again, let's make sure we're doing our parts within our communities on a consistent basis. Community work is every day. We got to work hard to keep ourselves alive. And let's hold our white counterparts who claim to be allies, let's hold them to the fight. Let's do it, man. Let's make sure we stand alive. Hey, man, y'all know what it is, though. Joseph Ward here. And this is the Freedom Train podcast series, man. www.freedomtrainradio.com. Once again, thank you, Mr. Kyra Hawkins, for coming through and giving us your information, telling us your story, and you know it's a great conversation we had. So I hope y'all learned a lot. And man, you know how it is, two fingers in the air like a player, man. We up out of here. Peace.